Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Kingdom Culture Church podcast. This is Jessie Rose, and today we had Discipleship Sunday. Pastor Fred preached an amazing word called We Make Space, We Make Room, all about the cost of discipleship. We hope this message blesses you.
So what I want to do tonight is I want to talk a bit about make space, make room. I want to talk about the cost of growth, the cost of revival, and what it means to be actively involved in discipling people in your world, which is going to be great. So we're going to read a quick passage together. Matthew 14 says this: immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead on with him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up onto the mountainside by himself to pray. So he got rid of the big room. He got rid of the conference auditorium and he went to be with his Father. There is a danger as we grow as a church that you will find yourself in a crowd but not connected to the King. In this age, it's so easy, particularly as a young adult, to come and enjoy the worship and maybe enjoy the sermon and go out for grilled afterwards, but that's not the goal. Oh, it's a great byproduct of what we do, but the goal of church is not actually community. The goal of church is not actually to feel good about yourself, but I pray you do. The goal of church is to be connected to the King and to preach the gospel, to minister the Lord, have him minister unto you. And so even though I genuinely pray that you find lifelong friends, I pray you find a spouse, I pray you find everything you're looking for. But the goal of church is to be connected to the King and be stirred and edified in your spiritual gift. And so we're making space and room for that to happen. Jesus, wherever he went, drawing a crowd was never a problem. Crowds turned up for Jesus, but it was also never the intent. And so wherever he went, he'd preach and people would rock up and he'd preach so amazingly that people would fill the beach and he'd have to step out on a boat so that there was room and he didn't get swarmed. And he preached at the temple and people listened, and he preached at Luke's house and a paralyzed man got healed. And wherever he went, a crowd followed. But hear me, the crowd wasn't the intent. The intent was to bring the kingdom of heaven. And really, the ministry of Jesus is less about crowds of thousands and more about 12 guys. Because even though the crowds are amazing, and I'm sure it's sowed seed, we read about disciples changing the known world. We read about the people that Jesus invested into change the world. The Chosen's great because it actually gives us a picture of Jesus doing 3.5-year discipleship course. And he ate with the guys, and he laughed with the guys, and he corrected the guys. And even though all the other stuff is amazing, genuinely, the Church of Christ was born from the people that he discipled. Yes. And so my question to you tonight is, who are you discipling? Yeah. And are you being discipled? Right. It's great to come to church, but a song won't disciple you. And discipleship, sometimes being discipled sucks. It's way better just to sit in a worship song and enjoy it and enjoy this, that, and the other. It's hard when the person that's discipling you says, hey, you're off here. Hey, this thing about you does not line up with Jesus. But it's the best thing for us. And it's such an honor to disciple others, not in the way of we want to correct them, but hey, what's your story? Hey, can I pray for you this week? Hey, what can I do to bless you? What can I do to make your walk with Jesus a closer experience? Jesus is less concerned with community and more concerned with connection. Sometimes church has become an automated car wash. I love the car wash in North Lakes near Blacktown. You go through and I put my car in neutral and it's just the best feeling. And even in the car, you can smell the soap and it's just great. You just recline. I usually put like a gaming podcast on and just have a great 15 minutes, man. It's awesome. And I drive out of there feeling like a celebrity, even though no one cares. I drive out and I'm like, my car's clean. I feel great. But some of us turn up to church like that. We put it in neutral. And we're like, hey, wash me, do the thing, get me ready for next week. A church is not a place to put it into neutral. A church is a place to lean in and go, God, what would you have for me this week? What would you commission me to do this week? What words do you have for me? Lord, where are you going to expand me? God, what are you going to cut off me? What are you going to circumcise from me? It's way easier to turn up to church and put it in neutral, particularly when the aircon's on, the coffee's good, and the band's playing well. Well, I'm just going to just going to chill. I don't know why I'm doing that. I've got an auto. I just pull a button. This morning, Gabby's going for a driving test on Wednesday, and she comes up to me and she goes, going for my license on Wednesday. I was like, that's awesome, girl. She's like, yeah, I feel like I'm probably going to pass the first time, not the third time. I failed. I was like, cool. She's like, she's getting so sassy, man. She's getting all confident. And she's like, do you drive an auto? I'm like, I do. She's like, cool. I'm going to get a manual because, you know, independence. I was like, Gabby, you better pipe down. But also don't forget me when you're a medical scientist and I need help with the bills. Church is an invitation to a deeper life in Christ, an invitation to new habits, new patterns, and a new depth of communion. In the passage we just read, a couple of verses earlier, there was a big event with free food. This kid turned up with a lunchbox, and Jesus and the disciples did this crazy thing, and thousands of people, theologians think around 10,000 people, it says 5 to 6,000 men, but 10,000 people, it's a lot of people, were fed. It's interesting, a chapter later, where'd they all go? Now, I like free food as much as the next person. I love it how at like the bakeries, they have like the free breads. And I'm always just like, when me and Anna go to the groceries, I'm like, I just gotta go get some free bread. She's like, do you need some free bread? I'm like, absolutely. I love free food. But if lights, coffee, food vans, and platform is what gets someone, it won't be hard to take someone. I love the full service. I love to pack conference. I love a taco truck. My goodness, I love a taco truck. I love good lighting. I love free food. But can I tell you, when it comes to Anna, I'm not just married to Anna when we're at a resort at the coast and Barry White's playing and someone's babysitting Squish. Oh, it's easy to be married then. It's easy. This is the reason why I made a covenant to Anna. In 2014, I made a covenant saying, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health. Why? Because bad things were gonna come. Why? Because life. Yeah. That's why you make a covenant. Yeah. You don't make a covenant for the good times. You don't need a covenant in the good times. Yeah. You make a covenant for when resistance comes. Yeah. Have you made a covenant with the bride of Christ? Yeah. Have you committed to discipleship? Have you committed to the Great Commission? Have you committed to giving your money weekly? Have you committed to all these things? Because if you haven't, when resistance comes, you don't have a covenant, you've got comfort. And when the comfort goes, you'll go. When the free food leaves, you'll leave. When the preference changes, you'll change church. But if you've made a commitment and if you've got an investment, you'll hang around. You see, at church, our need for entertainment, friends, belonging, and status is high, but our desire for deep formation is low. So when the preference isn't met and when we're required to grow and when the free food leaves, so do we. You see, it's fun to sing songs like, we make space, we make room. It's fun to sing songs like, Lord, send revival. Lord, send it now. We're not just singing about revival, we're demanding it quickly. But do we actually want to count the cost of what a revival and growth will cause? I don't know about you. I don't want to be flippant with the things I ask the Lord to pour out. I'm so excited at the rate of the growth. I'm so excited for our third service. I'm excited for our new facility. I'm excited to increase our KCW projects. I'm excited to plant 10 to 15 more life groups because about 5 groups are going to be planted out from tonight because you're going to go see Jesse and Emma and be like, we've got a living room. We're pumped. We're not going to sit on the sidelines anymore. I'm so proud of you. Well done. It's just so good. But there is a cost. There is a cost, and please hear my heart here. I'm not having a cry, but I felt the Lord speak to me in a dream about the new facility, and I called Nathan, and we had a chat, and we felt God was on it. So when Michael was 4 days old, I was walking around abandoned warehouses. Now, you might go, that's your choice. It is, but I felt God on it. So I went, darling, are you okay if I disappear and pay this cost? And she went, what time is it? What day is it? Don't be gone long. And I went, no worries. You see, sometimes the things we sing and the things we pray, it's just lip service. Because if we actually knew right now what it would cost, we don't want to do that. That's why we need to make a covenant. Because you make a covenant and then God pours out his spirit. And then at the end of a 10-hour day, you go home and set the living room up for your friends to come over so you can have life group. Not because it's comfortable. It's not. You're tired. It's because you made a covenant. And this is the way we need to live and we need to lead in this new season of our church. I was thinking about the cost the other day and I was thinking about the things I miss. Who was here at Bolt Drive? Just give me a wave quickly. Cool, like 10 of us. I miss a couple of things. That was, for those who knew, that was our last building and we were a bit of a smaller church. Bigger building, but smaller church. I miss knowing everyone in our church. That was a nice feeling. Knowing everyone, knowing a bit of their story. I've been here since we've had 5 people and now we have 500 on a Sunday. I miss managing no staff. Now we manage 12 staff. They're the best, but it takes works and there's dynamics with me as well. I miss feeling like Frodo and Sam leaving the Shire. I miss that feeling of adventure. There's still adventure, but it's more like dangerous now. I miss that feeling of just, oh man, we're just giving it a go. And I miss preaching once a weekend. I miss the comforts of small stakes. But I did not sign up for comfort. I signed up for calling. Luke 14:25 says, "For which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.'" Can I tell you, we have a responsibility as believers to make sure that God is not mocked. Our church is growing. People are being saved and there's an expansion. Far be it from us to let our lack of obedience in the areas of discipleship, finance, serving and attendance hold back what God would do and have the world go, "Oh, nice false start, guys. Oh, is God really moving?" And heaven's up there going, "We're doing our bit." I know. I'll be funny, not next week because Pastor Cody's preaching. I'll be funny in a couple of weeks. There's a cost. I just want to be real with you because sometimes spiritual leaders, they treat you like people coming to a used car dealership. And they go, "Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be amazing." And they throw 700 like vision statements at you and tell you why it's the best thing in the world and you're going to love it. It's going to be amazing. But they don't talk about the inconvenient cost of growth. So I want to treat you as adults and be honest about what it's going to take for us to take a region for Jesus Christ. So let's talk a bit about the cost. What's the cost? Oh, serving in God's house. That's a cost and we thank you for it. Giving of your finance. Can we talk about this for a second? This is costly. Sometimes I do this stupid thing where I calculate how much I've given away in a year and I get immediate depression. We got sanctuary offering coming up and it's like... I'm contemplating how honest to be. But it's just like, can I get a house at some point? Like, but this is the thing. I'm no longer my master. Galatians 2:20 says, "No longer I that live, but Christ that lives in me." He's the boss. And either I trust him or I don't. Learning to forgive, that's a cost. Being personally stretched. Seeing your church change in form, not in DNA, but in the way it runs to facilitate hundreds and hundreds of new people and families and kids. Having to trust church leadership despite bad press. I am extremely aware that you just, every couple of days, a leader's falling. The difference between now and 30 years ago is you didn't have a notification about it 30 years ago. Whereas now you sit at home and you look at leader after leader after leader seemingly have issues. But you know what they don't post about? They don't post about the old men and women that hand their churches on in health and succession. When Bill Johnson retires, there won't be news lines going, "Man, and Pastor Bill did it and he's got a legacy." No, because that doesn't get clicks. Yeah. But it is a cost to trust in a world where negativity is being thrown at you. It's a cost because the attack of the enemy will come. Oh, the devil loves a stagnant church. He won't attack a stagnant church. Why? Because he's happy with where they're at. Yeah. But you start growing. You start seeing people get saved. You start baptizing kids. Oh, we don't have to be scared. We just got to be aware. There's a cost to opening up your home once a fortnight to love God's kids. It's a great cost, but it's a cost nonetheless. Investing your time into people, jumping on a kids team because God's moving in there. Coming for the 8:30, but staying for the 10:30 just cause. Thank you, two people. You're like, nah, man, I'm going to the beach. You can go to the beach. Enjoy. Saving now for sanctuary offering because you won't let others pay for our future home. There's a cost to God building his church. It's not always comfortable. I'm just being real with you. I could just be all visionary and tickle your ears, but I feel like that's not really being honest. But the good thing is, before we build a tower, we count the cost, amen? Yes. Romans 12:1, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. In light of what Jesus has done, our sacrifice is reasonable. Oh, it's valuable, but it's reasonable. Hey, what I'm doing, it's not for a spiritual leader. It's not for a church brand. It's for Jesus Christ. It's because he's worthy of it. He's worthy of it. What determines how much of God's glory a church will reveal? It is not the size of the crowd, but rather the depth of their commitment. Fred, you seem to ask a lot for us to pray for revival, serve on teams, attend services, give weekly, invite friends and family. Now you're asking us to run life groups in homes. What's the deal, bro? Well, I'm trying to crucify the crowd mentality and empower the discipleship depth needed to sustain a move of God. Needed to sustain a move of God. The roots of revival have to go deep past the shallow soil of long or short service, free coffee or paid, Elevation or Bethel, flag or no flag, one service or five, one friend or 10. If your roots go deep, you'll bleed for this thing. For when I have deep roots, I go from a watcher of the ministry to a worker in the ministry. Last Christmas, it was Squish's first Christmas. And she was like 2 months old or something, 3 months old. And I bought her these from Pepper Penny. I brought her these wooden blocks with Anna. And I usually love Christmas. I love getting gifts, right? But I was just like, man, I'm so excited. And I was like, you know, like she won't understand what it is. I'm like, she will, she'll love it. She'll be like, my dad is my hero. I'm so excited for Micah to open her presents. And I sat there on Christmas Day as Micah just gummily sucked on the wrapping paper, didn't even open it properly. And I was just like tearing up. And I was just like, this is the best thing ever. And Anna had got me some great presents. And Anna was like, do you wanna look at this coin? I'm like, oh, so good. Michael, what do you think about your blocks? And Michael was like, just drooling. Something shifted in me this Christmas, so excited to see my daughter, who doesn't even get what is going on, receive something. You see, the hallmark of spiritual maturity is a rejoicing and giving unto others and seeing them blessed without the nagging cry of, what about me? When you can flip that, when you come to church with a, how can I bless someone? Revival is on the way. When you can come to church and go, I'm not comfortable, I feel a bit anxious, I'm gonna, in the 2 minutes, I'm gonna talk to three people. Revival is on its way because you've switched the focus from what do I get to what can I give. Now that process of spiritual maturity takes time, but as your pastor, I'm asking you to hasten the process. Is it, can you hurry up someone's spiritual journey? I don't know. But God is pouring out a level and a harvest. What does he say? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Yeah. I need you to support the third service with passion, faith, and zeal as we open up the Father's house. I need you, if you know Jesus and call Kingdom Culture Church home, to give weekly and faithfully, and thank you for those that do. I need 10 to 20 more life groups open so we do not leave spiritual babies in the gutter and new families in the wilderness. I'm right here with you. This is going to cost the staff and all of us something. But there's no better place to be than in the will of God. And church is not a concert. We are bond servants of Christ. And I get it. This isn't my funniest, almost inspirational message, I'm aware. My wife told me when I got home. But I do think it's gonna set us up for what God would do. We're doing well, I'm almost done. Being in the crowd costs nothing. Being a critic costs nothing. Being a disciple and making disciples will cost you everything. And because it costs a high price, disciples rarely bail on their investment. part of the reason that people move from church to church so much is they don't have a vested interest. They've become a professional commentator and they've got no skin in the game. Oh, the church adds value when you serve it. You care more about the church when your finance is invested in it. You care more about the church when multiple living stones in the church are there because of your discipleship investment once a fortnight. All of a sudden you got skin in the game and you won't recognize yourself. You'd be like, I love the church. You'll become one of those annoying people that when people talk bad about the church, you'll be like, what do you mean? It's the living stones, it's the royal priesthood. It's a revival plan of God. Like, it's how are we gonna, and they're like, oh, that's what we usually do. We usually, I can't say that word. We usually talk bad about the church together. Oh, I don't know what happened, man. I started inviting the church into my living room. Yeah. I started loving on people and praying for people. I got a prayer journal with notes of who I pray for in the church. I don't know. I don't really want to talk bad about the church anymore. Not because it's perfect. It's definitely not. But I got skin in the game and I'm protecting my crypto investment. Let me talk to you quickly about the difference between cars and then I'm done. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Great. The difference between cars. My first car was a Camry Sportivo. It was a good car. That was my first car. I passed my driver's license on the fourth attempt at Strathpine. And that night, my friends were going to Chermside to the movies. I said, Dad, can I use the Camry? It was his business car. I thought he'd say no, but he had two business cars because he was a baller. And he said, you can use the Camry. And so I drove the Camry to Chermside and I felt like $1 million. He let me use that car for 10 months. I was like, this is amazing. But this is the thing. I didn't treat it great. I didn't service it. I should have been vacuuming that thing, polishing that thing. 10 months later, he said, hey, son, I need the car back. We'll talk about how you can get your own car. Can you bring it back? And I brought it back and there was stains on the seats and food and I didn't look after it and I got a bit of a talking to, which fair enough. But why didn't I treat the Camry well, even though it was a great car? It didn't cost me anything. Then 2 weeks later, I bought a Mazda 323 Protege 1999. Let's put that bad boy up. Oh my gosh, this thing, man, this thing was anointed. I saved up about $1,500. My dad helped me with the rest. And I remember on the first night I got it, I went out with one of my youth leaders and we were driving around. We went to Macca's and got drive through and he got a Big Mac and I got something and we were going skating and he went to open and eat his food in the car. I said, my brother, this is a 1999 Mazda 323 Protege. You put those aluminium chips and that Big Mac away, that sauce is gonna get on these upholstered seats. He looked at me like I was insane. I want to tell you that car didn't get a stain on it. I polished that thing. I vacuumed that thing. I bought one of those little mini Hoover things. Like, I loved that car. It was so much worse than the car I had previously, but it cost me something. It cost me something. It's hard to care about something you haven't invested in. It's hard to serve something you haven't bled for. It's hard to get uncomfortable with something you're just a commentator of. Tonight, my cry is that you would start to bleed for the church. And I'm not saying you're not, but to another level, myself included. We would look at the local church and go, hey, you're awesome. And you got some issues, and I'm probably one of them, but you're amazing. And all throughout Christian orthodoxy, God has used you to change cities and nations. And I'm not gonna, in my young adult years, sit back and pontificate about what you could do better. Instead, I'm gonna get on the wall with my sword and my trowel, and I'm gonna build this thing until the walls fall off, because that's what you told me to do. Band, if you could come join me, that'd be awesome. I love the local church. It's got its problems. It's got its issues. Can I tell you something? As we get bigger, there'll be more issues because there's more people. People, I don't know, man. I just don't know about church, dude. It's so loud and so many people. You are going to struggle in heaven. I don't like that, it's not my preference. You are gonna struggle in heaven. It's everyone that ever was, ever is, and ever will be. Like, I'm an extrovert, and even I'm like, whoa. Like, hopefully I'll have like a castle in the woods that I can retreat to occasionally just to refresh after having hour-long discussions with Paul. The church is a good thing to invest in with your time, for serving with your money. People used to say, oh, Fred, I feel like you emphasize serving too much. Like, you know, well, I disagree. Because I think that this thing, as imperfect as it is and as imperfect as we are, I've been serving it for most of my life. And I've seen God do amazing things. It's not about us. It's about what he would do with his church. And so I want to ask you these three things again. Why don't we stand tonight? I want to ask you these three things. And we're kind of like, we're kind of done vision season now. So what does that mean? It means that we're going to get into series and every sermon's going to be different. There's not going to be double ups. You're going to be hearing from different people and it's going to be great. But this is what I would ask you as we head into this next season of the year and as we head into sanctuary offering and as we head into the exciting new things that God is doing. I said them already, but number one is after this service. Actually, I'm going to get them to stand there now. Emma and Jesse, can you go and stand over there? They were staying at the back, but after this service, if you have a living room, if you know that you could once a fortnight hang out with people for 90 minutes, you might not even have a living room, but if you've got a car, you can get to a cafe. I want to ask you to go and speak to Pastor Jesse and Emma and say, hey, I'm going to look after some people once a fortnight. I'm going to be a disciple. I'm not just going to watch. That's the first thing. The second thing is I would love you. You young adults are awesome. Like, we're awesome. Am I still young adult? 32? Yeah. No? Yeah. We're awesome. We've got passion to spare. And so I want to ask you to support the new flow of service on a Sunday. Pop into the 8:30. Bring your passion. Bring an espresso. And I want to ask you, don't let the 8:30 and the 10:30 pay the bills. I want to ask you to invest. I want to ask you to pray. I want to ask you to give weekly, set it up, do whatever you got to do. One, because it's the right thing to do. Two, it reveals your heart unto the Lord and watch the Lord surprise you. I'm now so confident in the principle of tithing that I tell people, give for a month and if you don't see God move, stop. Because in that month, he always moves. He always moves. So we're going to sing something, whatever you're feeling. And maybe we could just get the house lights down and I'm just going to really quickly make sure everyone here knows Jesus. And then we're going to worship. And then I want to ask once again, as we head into this new season, we do it with passion, zeal, and faithfulness. Amen. Why don't you close your eyes, bow your heads real quick.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. We hope that that sermon spoke to you. And I pray that it challenges you to give up your life and count the cost of discipleship and lay down whatever you need to lay down to follow after Jesus. Have the best week, church.